This is Monsignor Larry Moran, Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick's Catholic Church in 19th and Poplar, and we're continuing today our series on the Nicene Creed, the creed written at the Council of Nicaea in 325. My guest, as usual, is Mr. Ron Eldred, who is Professor of History and Religion at John Paul II Catholic High, and has had many other teaching jobs, but who is the present professor at John Paul II Catholic High. So, Ron, welcome once again. We've covered three sections already on the Creed of Nicaea, and we're up to that part where we believe in one God, the Father, the Almighty, and we're actually up now to make God the Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, of all that is seen and unseen. So we're beginning today with that part of the creed. It talks about God being the creator of angels and, of course, man, particularly, specifically, as Genesis describes it, the creation of Adam and Eve, our first parents. So, Ron, let's begin with what does the creed mean that God created Adam and Eve and all their descendants to be members of his family?
Well, as we had said in the last couple of sessions, that the Trinity itself is a family of three persons. That's why we use the name Father and Son, and of course then there's the Holy Spirit. And when in the creation process, after God created the earth, then on the sixth day he created man, and as we're going to see later on, in his image and likeness, and to be a part of his family. His, basically, you could think of it as his extended family. And they were to be his adopted sons and daughters, and to share in the inner life of the Trinitarian family. As we'll discuss later in the series, the second person is the Father, Son by nature. Our first parents, the first people that God created, were his sons and daughter, his son and daughter by adoption and by grace.
A special gift of God,
yes,
above nature, supernatural gift.
Right.
Okay.
God's intention was that they and their descendants were to live in happiness with him forever.
Okay.
They and all of their children were to be the Father's heirs. And the natural family, consisting of a husband, wife, and children, is patterned after the mirror image of the Trinitarian family. It's not the other way around. The family as we know it and the way it's intended to be, not only in our society, but every society in the world, father, mother, children, is a mere reflection of the Trinity itself, of Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
And we spent a considerable time before on talking about,
yes,
the family, inner family of God's mysterious life, the Trinity. Okay, so God intended Adam and Eve and their descendants to be happy with him forever in this life and also in the next.
In that case, it would have always been just one continuous life. There would have been a test. They passed the test, and they never would have died. So there actually wouldn't have been another life.
Okay. One of the gifts, supernatural gifts, they had was immortality.
Yes, immortality.
That they were not destined to die.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, now Genesis mentions that God created man or man and woman in his own image and likeness. Now, what do we mean by his own image and likeness?
Well, this is very, very important, and we're going to spend a little bit of time on this. So as you said, this is found in Genesis 1, 26 through 27. And to make them worthy of being his adopted children, God created the first human beings that we know as Adam and Eve in his image and likeness. And the Encyclopedic Dictionary of the Bible tells us that the term image is a phrase found in Genesis 1, 26 through 27 to designate the special superiority of man over the other works of God, God's visible creation. I'm quoting here, this image of God is the supernatural part of man's nature, which includes his soul, this is real important now, his soul and its faculties of intellect and free will. So the image part is the part where we're talking about created as a spirit like God, and we call that spirit, of course, a soul.
Okay.
And the soul possesses what are called operations or faculties of intellect and will. There are others, but those are the main ones that we're concerned with here.
And, of course, God has supreme intellect,
yes,
and supreme will.
And for the supreme will.
So that's where the creation is in his image.
That's what we mean, yes, in his image.
Okay.
In these natural perfections, man reflects in a limited and imperfect way God, the infinite spirit, whose intelligence and freedom are supremely perfect. Man's faculties give him the ability to communicate and to have relationships. Abilities that we discussed last week, the last couple of meetings, were that the Trinity, as the supreme level, possesses these qualities. Intellect gives man the ability to think, and free will, the ability to make decisions.
Okay, so that's why we call man or woman a rational being.
A rational
being. The ability to think, analyze, figure out things, and freedom that I can actually choose good or evil.
Free just as God is free.
Okay. But obviously God cannot choose evil.
Sure, he cannot choose evil.
All right.
And we can, of course. Later on in the series, we're going to see how through sanctifying grace and the infused virtues, man's nature is elevated to a supernatural plane and being and acting. Let me quote from the Catechism in regard to the man's image. Quote, being in the image of God, the human individual possesses the dignity of a person who is not just something, but someone. He is capable of self-knowledge, of self-possession, and of freely giving himself and entering into communion with other persons. He is called by grace to a covenant with his Creator, to offer him a responsive faith and love that no other creature can give in his stead. End of quote.
Okay, so we're distinguishing then man and woman from the animals.
Yes.
And all other creation. No one else can respond freely, knowingly and freely, to the revelation of God.
Right.
Okay.
To make sure everybody has got what we've said so far, that when you're talking about the image, that man is created in God's image, you're talking about man being created as a spirit like God, with the operations or the faculties of free will and intellect. Although, of course, God, of course, is an infinite being, and he has an infinite intellect and an infinite will. But nonetheless, we're still a mere image of God in that sense.
Kind of a blurred image.
Yes, very blurred. But,
okay.
And with fallen human nature, which we're going to talk about later, really blurred.
But it still gives each individual, as Pope John Paul II so often repeated, a unique dignity, because every human being has this dignity of the image of God.
And this is what gives human beings their worth.
Okay. Every human being.
Every human being. So anytime you're talking about rights and equality and this, that, and the other, if you leave that out, you've left the heart and soul out of it, and you're just wasting your breath.
Okay. Would you or would you not agree that a fundamental in Pope John Paul II's, and I imagine will be in Pope Benedict XVI's statements, that the heart of the matter, the dignity of each human being, and why each human being has inalienable rights, as we say in the Declaration of Independence, is because God has made each person in his image.
I believe it was Voltaire, who was a skeptic himself in the early 18th century in France, said that if there be no God, then why be good?
Oh, that's a great...
In other words, he didn't believe in God.
Right.
Yet he knew that, and I think it was Ben Franklin who once said something to the effect that, and he was this kind of a skeptic too, a deist, at least, in religion, a person who believes that God created and designed and created the universe, but then set it in motion and then had nothing to do with it after that. But he said something to the effect that don't talk against religion because it's like unchaining a tiger.
Unchaining a tiger. Unchaining a tiger. Oh, that's a beautiful figure. Okay. I like that. Okay. Well, so the dignity of each human being created in the image and likeness of God. Now, apparently the words are different. The image of God and the likeness of God.
Yes, they're different things. Interrelated, of course, but different. In likeness, God created Adam and Eve in original holiness and original justice.
Okay, now I think we need to really focus on that, because that's the kind of the heart of the matter of how Adam and Eve fell and Jesus came to restore the fallen. So let's talk about that. What is original holiness? We hear a lot about original sin, but what's original holiness?
Well, first let's try to find out what holiness is. Holiness, by holiness, Adam and Eve were originally like God, who is whole, perfect, sound, blessed, hallowed, sacred, and complete, possessing integrity, goodness, and righteousness. God possesses these things by his very nature. He is those things.
Okay.
His creatures, possess these things only by God's sanctifying grace, which means that this was the life of God dwelling in them. It was their participation in God's life. It's an abstraction. That's really what grace, the definition of grace is. It's the life of God within our souls.
Okay, now, grace in Latin means a gift. So this is a special gift that the scriptures say was given to Adam and Eve to have, participate in God's life. I think Jesus later on talked about, I'm the vine, you're the branches, that you share my life. That there's something extra extra given to human beings that they wouldn't have without this original gift of wholeness. I like that, our holiness that you mentioned. Okay, can we go on from there?
Yes, I like to add that because they possess sanctifying grace and were made holy by the Trinity dwelling in their souls, they lived basically at the supernatural level. Anytime that God dwells in our soul, it elevates our soul to the supernatural level.
Okay, we're living in a supernatural level. I think it was Bishop Sheen, in one of his many comparisons, talked about that if Pinocchio was given the ability to think and will like a little boy, he would have something supernatural to a puppet. And he would partake in the life of lives of little boys. So in a sense, supernatural is we are given something as humans that we wouldn't have had just from a natural creation.
Yes, what elevates us to the supernatural level is God dwelling in our soul, the Trinity. It's called the indwelling Trinity, the doctrine of the indwelling Trinity.
And that word's so familiar to most Catholics, sanctifying grace, means the gift that makes us whole, holy, participating in this above natural life.
Well, you know, we have the prayer, Sanctus, 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 Holy, Holy, Holy. So is that which makes us holy, sanctification.
Okay.
Sanctity. It's that which makes us holy. It means holiness.
All right.
Or complete, as I heard you said in many sermons over the years, makes you whole, complete.
Wholesome is a common word.
Yes, wholesome,
today.
Right.
Whole, wholesome, holistic.
Yeah, holistic.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this original justice or this original holiness or this original wholeness.
Well, you have the holiness part. And that has to do with wholeness, and then you have the justice part. That's the other side of it. By original justice, we mean that our first parents possessed an intensely intimate friendship with God and lived in harmony. The word harmony is very important.
Okay.
With themselves, and with the creation around them.
Okay, I like the word harmony. So we're in tune with God, in tune with ourselves, and in tune with the environment and the world around us.
And yes, and other human beings and what have you. Justice is often defined as giving someone his due. I'm sure just about everybody's heard that particular definition. To give him what he deserves.
I think they call it to each his own.
To each his own. Mm-hmm. To give him what he's got coming, whether it's good or bad. Mm-hmm. And man is most just when he renders to God love and obedience. And when he obeys God's commandments, when he does his will. And in their original state, Adam and Eve were just with respect to God. Thus they lived in a state of original justice, original harmony. So you can, original friendship. Sometimes they use the word friendship.
Okay, that's a good American word. I mean, popular,
sure.
Understood.
Let me quote the Catechism right here in that regard. Quote, by the radiance of this grace, all dimensions of man's life were confirmed. As long as he remained in the divine intimacy, man would not have to suffer or die. The inner harmony of the human person, the harmony between man and woman, and finally the harmony between the first couple and all creation comprised the state called original justice. So that's really sort of a definition right out of the Catechism. Although life in the Garden of Eden was heaven on earth and Adam and Eve possessed sanctifying grace, they experienced perfect natural happiness and lived in close friendship with God, they did not yet possess the beatific vision, or sometimes it's called beatific vision. I've heard it pronounced both ways. That's the vision of God himself.
Paul, seeing God face to face.
Seeing God face to face, yes. And it's something more than just seeing God through the senses. It's a direct, my understanding of it is from the theologians, it's a direct... you might say, view of God right on the soul, and it doesn't have to be filtered through the senses, so to speak.
Okay.
But this was something they could enjoy only after passing a test of their love and devotion to God. He wanted his adopted children to love him by a free choice of their wills. I mean, he could have created them like little robots who would have loved him and would not have any choice, but then they wouldn't have been like him. They wouldn't have been in his image. They wouldn't have had a free will. Okay. And so he wanted them to love him freely.
It was a very great, magnificent, but dangerous gift that God gave to the human race.
Yeah, God was asking for it. It seems like.
Okay. And this is all sort of spoken in language, figurative images in the story of the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Okay, and the fall, of course, eventually we're going to talk about what the coming of Satan into the garden. Okay, well, so this free choice and being the image and likeness of God. Okay, what about, did this continue? As we know, the whole Bible is the rest of that what happened after that?
Yes, tragically, our first parents lost original holiness and original justice. This is specifically what they lost. Original holiness, that is, they lost their holiness because God left their soul. This is really what we would call, theologically, mortal sin.
Okay.
Mortal means death, and so mortal sin, we're talking about death of the soul. And so God leaves their souls, and so they're no longer holy. They're no longer just because they no longer, when the Trinity leaves their souls, they're no longer God's friends. They're no longer God's adopted children. They've been, so to speak, kicked out of the family.
Okay.
And the fact they got literally kicked out of the Garden of Eden. And
of course, by their own decision.
By their own decision.
And they had been warned, do not eat the fruit of the forbidden tree, or you will die.
Yes, they freely chose to commit the first sin, the original sin. That's why we call it the original sin. It was the first sin.
Okay.
Well, God told them that they could have everything for their enjoyment in the earthly paradise that we call the Garden of Eden, or the Bible does, except the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. But tempted by Lucifer, who was, of course, one of the most beautiful of all the archangels, for he rebelled against God and was cast out of heaven, in the disguise of a serpent, first Eve, then Adam, in their pride, ate the forbidden fruit. Pride is the worst sin of all, because one guilty of pride is trying to be God.
And that was Lucifer's own problem.
That was his problem, yes.
And then he tempts Adam and Eve with the same kind of attraction.
Well, yeah, that's exactly it. The serpent had tempted them by telling them that they would not die if they ate of the fruit of the forbidden tree, but instead they would be gods, knowing good and evil. In other words, they wanted to be God. That's pride. Anytime we sin, anytime we make our will instead of God's will, that is the sin of pride, and the worst sin of all. That's why the virtue of humility is the greatest of all of the virtues, because it's the opposite of pride.
And Jesus kept stressing that when he came, learn of me because I am meek and humble of heart.
He probably stressed that more than any other of his virtues.
And it was just the opposite. it was an antidote for Lucifer's sin of pride and Adam and Eve's sin of pride.
Right. Let me make a little quote here from the Catechism about that, the forbidden tree. Quote, the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to till and keep it. And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, you may freely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, For in the day that you eat of it, you shall die. This is found in Genesis 2:15-17. The Catechism says of this tragic event, the entire harmony, this is what's important, the entire harmony of original justice foreseen for God and God's plan will be lost by the sin of our first parents. In other words, they lost their friendship with God. They lost their place in God's family because the this is what we mean by justice. Justice is giving God his due, and they didn't give God his due.
Okay.
So they lost their justice.
And I was fascinated by what you said just a little earlier, Ron, that God had given them everything for their happiness in the Garden of Eden, except that they couldn't eat of the tree of good and evil, which meant that they had to recognize that they were not God,
right,
that they were creatures rather than the creator. And isn't that the basic struggle we all have, that I want to make up my own rules? I want to be God, the lawgiver, rather than let God be the lawgiver.
I think it was St. Augustine that once said something to the effect that sin is making your will other than God's will. My will be done instead of
thy will
be done.
That's beautiful.
Yeah,
and that's really the heart of what sin is, even though sin in our culture is not a very recognized word.
I think the great psychiatrist that I always thought highly of, Carl Menninger, once he wrote a book called Whatever Happened to Sin, back a number of years ago in that regard.
That the whole word had just been blurred out, mm-hmm, bleached out, and now we call it, I made a mistake, I made a bad decision, but it takes away the fact that I choose free. Sin is I choose freely to do something that I know God doesn't want me to do. Okay, and I think it was Pope John Paul II's summary on the importance of confession or the sacrament of penance in our time, where he quoted this famous saying, the sin of the 20th century, that's the one we just came through, is the loss of the sense of sin.
Mm-hmm.
That really there isn't any sin anymore. And that's the whole heart of what happened in the Garden of Eden.
Yes.
Okay, well, what was the result, the consequences of this original or this first sin of Adam and Eve, as it's described in the book of Genesis?
Well, upon discovering that Adam and Eve had disobeyed his commandment not to eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Now, obviously, this is kind of speaking of God, like in human terms, we call that anthropomorphism in the theology, I believe, putting it in human terms. It makes us understand it a little bit better. God said to the woman, quote, I will greatly multiply your pain in childbearing. In pain you shall bring forth children. yet your desires shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife, you have eaten of the tree which I commanded you. You shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In toil you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth to you. And you shall eat the plants of the field. In the sweat of your face, sometimes you say brow, you know, you see some translations, you shall eat bread. You shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken. You are dust, and to dust you shall return. Genesis 3:16, 19. In other words, as St. Paul tells us, quote, for the wages of sin is death, in Romans 6:23.
Okay, so we say this was a earthquake of, a spiritual earthquake of unimaginable proportion. It shook the whole relationship of man and God, man with each other, man and woman with each other, and man's relationship to the environment. And that we're still, and that the whole idea of Jesus coming to straighten this thing out or to restore original harmony is based on this revelation in the book of Genesis.
Yeah, this is a term we'll be talking about later, to restore original, to restore justice. And so when we get right with God, you know, you hear that term, particularly Protestants use that term, I think quite correctly, getting right with God, and justification is the word that's used in that process, because it's getting back the way with in harmony with God. Let me quote a little bit from the Catechism here in regard to this loss. It nicely summarizes what we've been saying here. Quote, although it is proper to each individual, original sin does not have the character of a personal fault in any of Adam's descendants. It is a deprivation of original holiness and justice. But human nature has not been totally corrupted. It is wounded in this natural powers proper to it, subject to ignorance, suffering, and the dominion of death, and inclined to sin, an inclination to evil that is called concupiscence. Baptism, by imparting the life of God's grace, erases original sin and turns a man back towards God. But the consequences for nature, weakened and inclined to evil, persist in man and summon him to spiritual battle. Let me quote another here. I think we have a couple of minutes. To quote the Catechism further on the consequences of original sin, quote, the harmony in which they had found themselves, thanks to original justice, is now destroyed. The control of the soul's spiritual faculties over the body is shattered. The union of man and woman becomes subject to tensions. Their relations henceforth marked by lust and domination. Harmony with creation is broken. Visible creation has become alien and hostile to man. Because of man, creation is now subject to its bondage to decay. Finally, the consequences explicitly foretold for this disobedience will come true. Man will return to the ground, for out of it he was taken. Death makes its entrance into human history.
Okay, now, you quoted many times well from the Catechism of the Catholic Church, and the Catechism is our latest gift from the Church. I believe 1993 or something like that, it was finally published for the whole Catholic world. What do we really believe? And if we're covering a lot of important things. And if a person just picks up a Catholic catechism, they can easily review some of these things that we're talking about. So our time is running out. For now, we hope to see you on our next series. May God bless you, and always and in always.